This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, very fired up for our guest, Richard Whitstock. He is the principal at Domus Homes. He was on about 5 years ago, just over 5 years ago.
It feels like yesterday.
It doesn't.
It doesn't feel like yesterday, no, honestly. No. You know what? How different the start of 2019 was?
Versus 2024?
Yeah. So it's five. We held the podcast going on a kitchen table of a rental of a garden suite in Mount Pleasant at the time.
I was building my house. Yeah. I was.
That's so where, we invited Richard into like a dingy wood frame apartment over on 14th.
I didn't even have any kids. I was probably like,
what are we going to do?
Like, I was like, we're going to go to a Mount Pleasant restaurant tonight?
Yeah.
Although my wife was pregnant, so.
Well, yeah, it was a different time. So
it was a very, very different time.
Yeah, that was pre-COVID. I feel like the 2019 market was heating up over the course of the year, but relatively slow because of like 3.5% interest rates or something like that.
My hairline was thick and wavy.
It was great. We've asked Richard on a bunch of times.
Yes.
He's a tough guy to pin down. We finally got him back. So exciting to have him back today for a good talk about all things Vancouver real estate.
We cover everything in this conversation. Really great. Just
one of the most thoughtful guys on Vancouver real estate, I would say.
Yeah. And great Twitter, although he's getting off of X, it sounds like. Maybe more of a LinkedIn.
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully he's presence. Somewhere where we can follow along.
Yeah.
Because he's, I feel like he puts out commentary on like sales data and ratios that is useful, just thoughts about housing, thoughts about the future of the city and policy. Mm-hmm. He's really smart economics wise. It's just, he's a great follow on Twitter. I feel like over the last decade, I've learned a ton from just following Richard Whitstock.
Right. And the nice thing about it is because it was 5 years ago when we had him on the program, it's really just kind of catching up. But in catching up, we catch up on all facets of the market. And so this is a great kind of overview of what's going on, his thoughts on where we're at and where we were. And I think
and where we're going.
And yeah.
But before we get to our talk with Richard Adam, we do have our MLA Newswire weekly headline.
Yeah, Matt. And the headline this week is pre-sale performance update. February sees solid absorption percentages, but overall market remains cool.
What I love about this, Adam, is we always talk about the what is it? Greater Vancouver Realtors now, not the REBGV.
Sure.
The Greater Vancouver Realtors stats. And this is like the pre-sale version of that. Let's just break it down. So in order to gauge the temperature of the pre-sale market, there's two key metrics, total units absorbed and same month absorption. And for February, we're looking at same month absorption, which is basically which projects launched and what that absorption of those units released looked like.
Right. And that's because my understanding is most units will sell once they're released, right?
There's like the build up, the momentum, hype machine, right?
Yeah. The release date, you know, you see the absorption. And it tells you how the market's going to react to that particular product.
Exactly. So in February, there were, 600 units that came to market. 250 of those units that were released sold, which is a 42% absorption
rate. That seems pretty good to me.
Well, if you think about it from like a sales ratio perspective, that seems really high, right? Yeah. That's a seller's market. But here's the rub. 250 of 600 is positive, but in an average February in the pre-sale market, there's usually closer to 500 sales.
Okay.
So strong month, but in the historical long-term average, we're batting about 50% of the regular sales. So still a cooler market.
So in other words, new projects that came to market in February are seeing sales, but the totality of the presale market is still depressed.
That's exactly it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Absolutely, Adam. Subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. If you liked what you heard today, visit mlacanada.com to subscribe now.
Matt, this episode's also sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, our real estate company in Vancouver. And today we will always bring a listing.
We always bring a listing. We want to highlight a listing. This is launching on Monday. It's 7844 Marchwood Place. This is in Champlain Heights, Southeast Vancouver. What I love about this listing in relation to our talk with Richard Wittstock today is Richard Wittstock is all about missing middle homes,
right?
Building missing middle for Vancouver, creating family homes. There is maybe not a more family-friendly neighborhood with family-friendly price points than Champlain Heights. 7844 Marchwood Place. This is a three-bedroom home from 1980, 1,700-plus square feet, all three bedrooms on the same floor, huge backyard, same owner, lived there for 40 years, raised her family there. It's a quiet cul-de-sac. There is nothing not to like about 7844 Marchwood Place. And the listing price, $1,089,000.
Yeah. And appreciate everybody reaching out last week about the Southeast Marine townhome that is now under contract. But if you do want to monitor our listings or see what we're bringing to market, head over to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, where all of our listings are featured. While you're there, you can get a copy of the sold plan.
You just got to hit sell with us, Adam.
Yeah, sell with us. It's sold stands for start on launch date. It's a guide, a step-by-step guide for how to get your property ready for market in the shortest amount of time, to make sure you don't leave any money on the table. It's a great plan. Head over to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast to get your own copy. Matt, without further ado, our conversation with Domus Homes' Richard Wittstock.
This is fantastic. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one-beds to three-beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Richard Wittstock. He is the principal at Domus Homes. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Very well. Yeah, thanks for coming down, Richard. And we should say past guest, fan favorite, but it's been
5 years.
It's been a while.
It's been 5 years. I had no children last time we talked. That's a distant memory for me now.
Congratulations. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting 5 years. It's
right.
Been a bit of a roller coaster.
Any changes?
I think anybody in the real estate industry in our city will attest it's been a very interesting and eventful, bumpy four or five years now. I mean, you know, we're 2024 now, 2019. We didn't know that we had a pandemic around the corner getting ready to hit us, right?
Yeah, I feel like 2019 to me, it was like, 3.5% interest rate seemed like a high interest rate that we were struggling with as well. Maybe Richard, for those who weren't listening in 2019 or can't recall, because it was actually early 2019, right? I think it was January.
It was January 2019.
So yeah, it feels like a lifetime ago. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a local fellow. I grew up in Ladner in suburban Vancouver. went to Delta Secondary School and from there to UBC Commerce, which now is known as Sauder School of Business. I did my four-year business degree there and then did a little bit of traveling after that and came back to Vancouver in 1993, where the recession that I graduated into in 92 was sort of starting to wane and ease off a little bit. So the job market was a little bit better. Started my career in real estate appraisal for an appraisal company known as at the time as Burgess Austin. I became Burgess Colley Sullivan, now is Ryan. So, you know, great mentorship there. Learned a lot about real estate analysis. Got to do, always knew I wanted to get into building. Like I knew that from a young age, from probably second year university. I was 18 years old and had to decide my specialization. And I remember like I was literally, I was in the washroom and trying to talk to people about this. And it just kind of hit me. It's like, no, I've always wanted to build. That's all I've ever wanted to do is just build buildings. So from there, everything kind of flowed from that moment. And so through my appraisal career, was able to work with a lot of the developers in the city, going for their construction financing, helping them price their buildings before they launched their pre-sale campaigns, doing feasibility analysis and that sort of stuff was, you know, for me in my 20s was a really great launch pad for my career. And then one of my clients hired me. A large local development family, went to work with them for the start of the 2000s. So the great run-up of market that we had from 2001 to 2007, then got to experience 2008, which was a bit of a change. And and then sort of 2010 worked with for a few years with Robert Fung at the Salient Group, doing some great heritage projects.
Wow.
And a tower in downtown New West called Trap and Holbrook. We built some really cool projects that, you know, brand defining, neighborhood defining projects there for 3 or 4 years. I said to Robert, who is an old friend, I said, you know, and an old client when I'm going back to my appraisal time, said, yeah, you know, I want to set up my own thing, but I can see you know, you need some horsepower. So I'll come work with you for 60 or 90 days. And while I'm setting up my own thing and ended up staying with him for 4.5 years. But then 2015, we were finishing that project. And, you know, I was in my early to mid 40s at that time, I guess, and said, okay, well, now it's now or never. Like, you know, it's time to actually go out on my own and do this thing. And so partnered with some other people that I knew and set up Domus. So we opened the doors January 2016. So we're in our ninth year of business now. You know, wanted to focus on a niche that was sort of, you know, we saw the housing crisis as a drum that industry has been beating for decades now, that there's a shortage of housing. The municipalities are the major gatekeeper. They're restricting supply. We hadn't built any rental housing in 40 years. Conditions were just starting to turn favorable at that time. So with some of the incentives and some of the low interest rates that we had at that time. So we decided to focus our business sort of 50% on rental apartments and then 50% on missing middle townhouses, some apartments as well, strata condo apartments. But yeah, really trying to serve those two niches in the marketplace and really carve that out for ourselves. And so that's largely what we've done. We've completed a couple of rental projects in North Vancouver and in Marpole called Victoria and Laurel. We call them the Two Sisters. Very similar building, 64, 65 unit, courtyard style building. So single loaded through units designed around a central courtyard where we feel like with those buildings, not the typical double loaded corridor, which you get in your elevator and go down a dark corridor into your suite. These are designed around an open outdoor courtyard and you get to know your neighbors and bump into them. And so the sort of philosophy around the rental housing that we've been doing and townhouse projects as well. We've got one under construction right now, Sammer, which is 23 homes in the Burquitlam neighborhood. We finished 41 units called Laval in Coquitlam as well last year. Last year, we hit a milestone for the company with the completion of Laurel, and Laval was our first year delivering over 100 homes. So we'll do that again this year with the completion of Sammer. and the completion of the Beaumont Shaughnessy rental project. They're both well under construction right now.
And the 100 plus, these are townhomes and garden flats? Is that generally?
Townhomes. So we focus on, we self-perform our construction. So we have internal construction management. So we focus on wood frame, you know, 3 to 6 stories primarily. So our rental buildings are generally 4 to 6 stories. And then our townhouses, 2 to 3 story townhouse buildings, often stacked, some slab on grade, 3-story townhouses.
And are you, the rental buildings, does Domus retain the buildings?
Yeah, we do. We've got an external partnership that we work with and we build to keep.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing that strikes me, Richard, is the focus on the missing middle and on livable spaces. Like, it seems like both those are components of what you're doing. I guess I'm wondering how much of that is kind of a philosophical making Vancouver a better place and also kind of economic opportunity, I guess.
Yeah, I have a strong philosophical underpinning behind what we do and how we design our communities and our homes. I mean, as I mentioned, I grew up, you know, in the 1970s, 1980s in the suburbs, typical Gen X suburban, you know, free range kid lifestyle. We'd go play road hockey in the cul-de-sac, or we'd go ride our bikes for, you know, hours on end, God knows where. Our parents never had any idea where we were, right? And that world has changed a lot for our kids. I mean, my kids are 15 and almost 17 now. And I think, you know, fairly typical in that their lives are a lot more programmed. There's a lot more traffic on the streets now. We live in the city and, you know, you worry that, you know, you can't just let your kids go ride their bikes. You know, thankfully, we're getting a better network of bike trails and active transportation, which I'm a big, you know, proponent and supporter of. But so we try to substitute that in our townhouse communities, providing those opportunities for kids to play and, you know, whether it's courtyards, common green spaces, pathways, these sorts of things, really good private and common communal outdoor spaces, I think really key to kids. So you can live in one of our townhouse communities, and you don't really have to worry that your kid is, you know, the kids can, they can sort of run around in that, you know, semi-confined,
right,
safe area, but they can still be kids. And, you know, so it's trying to take some of that stuff that has been lost and try to get that back, right? Because our cities were designed around these single family homes that nobody can afford anymore. So the city's losing young families. So we have to, you know, accommodate families in a smaller footprint. So how do we do that, but still retain some of the magic that we had as kids growing up, right?
It's interesting. I was at this was about a month ago or so, but I was at a townhouse complex where we were in the unit and we were looking out and there was, you know, about 15 kids or so playing in the courtyard.
Yeah.
And all their parents were like, you know, having a glass of wine, cooking dinner. And I thought, this is like a liberating kind of lifestyle here. Yeah. You're right. It gives you almost what a lot of people from our generation had when we were playing out in street hockey and stuff. So it's almost like the single family home doesn't allow for that lifestyle necessarily anymore, or may not in certain areas, right, that have been maybe carved out or so that's an interesting
definitely.
Take.
Yeah, no, definitely true.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to kind of go back. We kind of touched on the fact that there's been a lot of changes since 2019, and maybe just to kind of touch on some of the themes that I mean, last time we talked to you, it felt like a completely different world, but maybe in your mind, like what are some of the big changes that have occurred in the city and in real estate just since we last spoke?
Yeah. I mean, it's a completely different environment, right? Like, we planned these rental projects pre-COVID. We'd seen fairly, you know, still construction costs still increasing faster than inflation, but not 15, 25% a year like we'd seen over the 3-year periods. And when you budget especially a rental building, you know, you'll go to CMHC and you'll fix the loan at a certain amount, right? And all of a sudden your costs start increasing at 10% a year through construction, and you've got supply chain issues and labor shortage issues. I mean, that was a stressful time, let me tell you. That was, I've never experienced anything like that in my life, right? And then first there's the fear of, you know, is there going to be a real estate market? Where are people going to move? Or is, you know, we didn't know at the beginning of pandemic, everything was shut down. Then it seemed like, so then we saw interest rates drop and then we saw demand spike. And so, but then we saw costs running as well. And now as the pandemic has waned, but now we've seen an overheated economy, the central bank's trying to rein that in and increased interest rates like we would have never anticipated, right? So again, that's presented a whole other set of challenges. So prices haven't really fallen. Prices have moved up, if anything, certainly over the last 12 months. So that's squeezed affordability even farther, right? Even harder for people. And rents have continued to move up. So it's really always this tension between strong demand, challenge to provide supply, and super challenged affordability in our region. It's not easy to, so we're doing what we can to try to be part of that solution and serve those markets as well as we can. But it's a challenge.
Are we, do you think, in a better spot now than we were in 2019? And like, I mean that, well, like,
no.
But maybe even taking it from like a policy perspective, like are in terms of like actually getting to the root causes,
yes.
Maybe taking it from there. And then I have like seven other directions we can take that question.
And sorry, not to interject here, but it feels like maybe the policy is there, but like the programs have become so complicated, like to actually get through a lot of builds now. It's a way more complicated development process, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years ago, you know, we were still talking about toxic demand, and you know, we were talking about investors and tax cheats, and a lot of like that conversation around housing was really taking a little bit of an ugly turn to it, right? You know, the government knew, I think, what they needed to do, but I think they needed to sort of address this populist kind of outcry first. So they threw everything but loosening supply at it for 5 years. And now in the last 12 months, we've finally seen, you know, this drum that we as industry have been banging for decades that, hey, the issue is the municipal gatekeepers and the lack of supply and the long processes and the restrictive zoning and the fact that municipalities are trying to finance their budgets off the back of new homeowners. Finally, we're starting to see some recognition and some policy changes coming from the provincial government. And that has moved the needle, started to anyway, but I mean, we're a long ways from actually seeing timelines getting compressed on development or seeing, you know, these homes actually become a reality and actually start to impact affordability in a positive way, right? It took us three, four decades to get into this, man. It's going to take a long time to get out. It's going to take 10 years to build our way out of this, at least. And we need some help on the interest rate front from that. We need some help on the development cost levies front, which seem to be constantly going the wrong way. We're seeing, you know, building code people, whoever write the building codes, I don't think they've received the memo that we're, you know, having a hard time providing enough housing because the building code keeps tightening up with every new iteration. So it's, you know, yes, from a policy standpoint, my hat is off to Ravi Kalyan and David Eby. They've done a good job introducing new policy moves in the last 12 to 18 months that will, in the fullness of time, have an effect. But, you know, it's been a long time coming. We've been waiting a long time. And it's going to take a long time for us to see the benefits of it, I think.
You know, that's actually a more optimistic take in some ways than some people we've had on the show that, you know, it's going to take at least a decade. That seems optimistic to me.
I think if you're not optimistic, I don't think you're a developer. It takes a healthy dose of optimism to fight your way through and get a building built.
And do you think like a lot of the, like what does say 10, 15 years out in your mind, I don't know if you can paint this picture, but how does the region change it? Like I know you're building in New West and Berquitlam. It seems like Berquitlam, like we were talking about The center of the, like, where's the global cities you're looking to? It seems like Burkwitlam's the center of the universe in a lot of ways now. But like, how does the region change over that period? And is it a lot of infill projects that kind of move the needle? Or are we talking concrete towers?
I mean, it's all of the above, right? It's, I'm not sold on the multiplex concept. I mean, it's not a business that we would get involved in. It doesn't have the scale that we need. I think building homes 3-4 at a time is a tough way to build your way out of a housing crisis when at the same density, you know, we can assemble 4 or 5 lots in a row and do 30-40 homes mm-hmm. with pretty much the same amount of effort. You know, I mean, our business is all about scale. And so trying to, again, it's, you know, back to appeasing neighborhoods and trying to keep the scale of these buildings small as opposed to, you know, a beautiful row house development,
right.
Which I think some of the most beautiful neighborhoods in the world are row house neighborhoods. So I don't know why we're not going more down that track and trying to, again, sort of gatekeep and limit the amount of change in these single family neighborhoods. These neighborhoods have to change.
Yeah. But this is interesting because the new zoning in Vancouver, I think we haven't heard that take. Like, that's actually like, it's kind of a NIMBY move towards more housing in a lot of ways. Like, it's not far, it doesn't go nearly far enough.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's always when you have to bring the public along, it's incremental and it's the art of the possible. So I don't want to say that they're doing a terrible job. They're not. They're doing what they can. There's a political reality, right? People have to get elected and it takes a long time to bring the public along to see that, hey, actually, you know, having a more vibrant street is actually a nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Having more shops and services close to me that I can walk to, having transit close to me is actually, these are good things. And you know, this is a city and it should act like it's a city.
Right. What neighborhoods in the city are you most excited about right now?
You talking about the city of Vancouver?
Or in the lower mainland.
Yeah. But I'd also like to hear the city of Vancouver.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go lower mainland first.
Yeah. I mean, most of our work right now is outside the city of Vancouver proper. We're really active in the Burkwitlam neighborhood and Coquitlam in general. The reason I love Burkwitlam is it's one of the rare areas where you can get family-oriented town housing, walking distance to transit and to shops and services. So the way they planned that neighborhood very, very well. So you've got towers on centered on North Road and on Clark and Como Lake. But then the density steps down from there fairly, you know, rapidly but evenly. So then you've got a lot of 6-story wood frames and apartments, and then the townhouse product that we focused on, row and stack townhouses, which, you know, the majority of our product is 3-bedroom homes oriented for families built around this kind of courtyards that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But also Coquitlam, when they were doing that Burkwitlam low heat neighborhood plan, they provided for reduced parking requirements, which really helped those developments work. So most of our homeowners would probably have one car. There'll be 1-car families. And they can walk to the Burkwitlam SkyTrain station in less than 10 minutes, 8-minute walk. So I love that neighborhood for that. I think that's a big part of my philosophy is family-oriented housing, you know, walking distance to transit if we can achieve that. So
is that, do you think like the reason you love that neighborhood is the reason why it's been so successful? Or is it more like if you build it, they will come or a combination of the two?
Yeah, I think it's well-planned. I think it's got a lot of amenities close by. There's a lot of high quality tower development that's been completed by my colleagues in the industry already that
right.
That create a real sort of center of gravity there. Again, the Millennium Line SkyTrain station has been huge. SFU right there, you know, just up the hill and
right.
The trails, Burnaby Mountain Regional Park. It's a fantastic neighborhood.
What about New West? I know you've been, it sounds like, I mean, you did a lot, even pre-Domus Homes, spent a lot of time in New West. That's another area where I feel like we were talking a lot about New West at one point and it seems to have, I don't know.
I'm still really excited about New West.
It's not that I'm not excited, but I just feel like it's not, I feel like it was, everyone was talking about New West at some point, and now
right.
It's kind of fallen off a little bit.
New West, yeah, I think maybe there's been a lack of product, new product launches.
In
the realtor community, maybe there hasn't been as much marketing and awareness as there was when we were doing the projects that we were doing in New West. So we're trying to bring that back now. We've got a project called The Village in the Port Royal neighborhood. That'll be 146 townhomes as the first phase of a master plan community completing that Port Royal neighborhood that that other developers, most notably Aragon, have been working on for the last 25 years.
Right.
If you haven't been out there, I mean, it's an incredible community that they've created there. Families, you know, it's a series of mostly low rise. You know, that's where that missing middle is. New Westminster has very few opportunities for townhouses. There are almost no townhouse projects in Burnaby, almost none in New Westminster, very few. But Port Royal is a place where there is, you know, a little bit lower density, and you can get that family-oriented, slab-on-grade townhouse form of development where you can get, you know, larger homes at great value. You know, we've got homes up to around 1,500 square feet. Again, all three bedrooms, common central green spaces, three large green spaces in the development. Where again, kids can have that free range freedom. We've got bike paths going through the development and connecting to the broader network of bike paths that go down to the river boardwalk around the neighborhood. And in the fullness of time, this master plan that we're working on in partnership with Platform Properties, who've been assembling this land over the last decade, it'll have up to 50,000 square feet of commercial space. So it'll finally bring a commercial heart to this neighborhood that, you know, that I think the residents have been waiting for a long time. So it's really exciting the way that community is going to develop.
Are there other areas that you're not active in right now that you're excited about in the Lower Mainland?
You know, I'd still love to see the neighborhoods around the old Expo line, you know, get developed. Yeah. It's been 35 years. It's about time to see some of those areas around Nanaimo Station, 29th sure. Avenue Station become what they could be in terms of vibrant communities. I love this Mount Pleasant neighborhood that you guys are in here. I mean, this is this mix of, you know, flexible live work, you know, high tech, you know, some phenomenal commercial spaces. Now you've got great restaurants, breweries, brew pubs, and just like
the quality of the commercial buildings seems to be significantly elevated.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole region, I love Lower Lonsdale, of course. We've got another rental project in the pipeline in Central Lonsdale. So, you know, I think Lower Lonsdale is probably, in terms of placemaking, there's nothing else that touches it as far as I'm concerned. Like the mayor and council there and the previous mayor that started that process, they did a phenomenal job. It's one of my favorite places. And, you know, if I could live there and take the SkyTrain across the sea bus across to my office in downtown Vancouver at sunrise. Like I wouldn't think there'd be a better commute on the planet.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
And you kind of, you cut your, in many ways, you cut your teeth in the city of Vancouver, and just interested on your take on the city right now. Like, is it a welcome place for developers, or is it a challenging market to operate in?
Every city is challenging right now. Like, it just is. You know, we have not seen our timelines improve. In some municipalities, we've seen them get a lot worse. I think the biggest challenge still is just municipalities have not been able to staff up to meet the workload of and it's not that we're building that much more housing than we were in the past. It's not like, you know, yeah, we're building more than we did in the recession in 2008, but you know, it seems like we've been behind the curve since then, and processes have gotten just, it's incrementally more complicated all the time. You know, regulations don't seem to really go away. They just seem to get layer on a little bit. It's just a frog in a boiling pot of water, or death by a thousand cuts, whatever you want to call that analogy. But right. It's all these incremental little changes that on their own don't seem like much, but add them up over 10 or 20 years and all of a sudden your timelines are doubled and you don't have the staff to deal with them. They've got, you know, of course, the older generation of planners and engineers at the cities are retiring, and younger generation is they're awesome. They're great. Like I personally dealing with them, fantastic people, smart staff. They want to do well, but they are overworked, and there's too many things that they have to navigate and deal with to move a file along. And so we haven't seen our timelines get compressed anywhere really in terms of approvals and getting in the ground. Maybe you get to council quicker, but then the engineering side, working out your offsite, your roadworks, your sewers, all that stuff, you know, you spend much longer on that end of it. So overall, you're still, you know, 3 years to get in the ground on a typical project these days. So
is it, do you think is it a staffing issue then? Like that they actually don't have enough staff, or is it the red tape? I feel like there's kind of the two sides of that.
Yeah. I think it's yes is the answer. I don't know. I don't work inside the city hall. So as an observer outside, yeah, I see a lot of things that's like, okay, well, is that really necessary? Do we really need to jump through this hoop? Okay. You know,
right.
Didn't have to do that 10 years ago, but there's a lot of things, you know, and there's a lot of things that are important, right? All these, the environmental and trying to get to net zero. I support that. And we, you know, we're building to step code 3 in all our buildings now. You're all, you know, nearly passive house in these projects. It's good. We have to do it. We see what the effects are of climate change. Like, we can't deny it, but it doesn't come without costs, right? Like, ultimately, it's the new homeowner that bears that cost.
We're in this moment where I feel like everybody's watching the news cycle in the market, and it feels like every week it feels spotty. A lot of people are saying the market feels spotty right now. A lot of people are anticipating potentially a really busy 2024, especially if we see a rate cut. There's a lot of other people that are suggesting higher for longer. What's your take on the market right now?
I think, you know, the market's coming out of its sort of winter doldrums into the spring. We've got Samer selling right now and signed another deal yesterday. You know, the project is, the sales are there. The mm-hmm. market is there. There's buyers for good product. There's not a ton of supply. Supply is a bit better than it was a year ago from a buyer standpoint, but still pretty low historically. You know, demand is pretty good. Prices are moving up 1-2% a month. That's so far what I've seen so far this year. And I expect that to continue through into the summer. And yeah, if we get a rate cut midsummer, look out. Yeah. I mean, Benjamin Tal and the other smart people, much smarter than me, are calling for 1.25 points rate cuts still in 2024, which I'll believe it when I see it. But yeah, I think, I'm very bullish on where the ownership market is going. The townhouse condo market is going for sure. You know, bringing on rental supply is still really, really going to be difficult. We need to see development charges come down. The municipalities, you know, they stimulated rental housing initially through after the Great Recession through cutting fees, right? They had the short-term incentives for rentals. They cut fees and cut DCCs. That those have all come back now with a vengeance, you know, to the point where you're paying $30, $40, $50, $60 a square foot on a rental building for development cost charges, in addition to your offsite servicing requirements and everything else. And you know, the rental performers, they just can't bear that at today's interest rates. So the rental business is a bit of a challenge right now, I think, going forward. So I'm not as bullish on rental. We're not actively looking for rental sites right now until conditions change.
That was such a small window where rental was exciting, right?
Yep,
like, I 100%. Feel like it was it even, yeah, it was like the last, there was like that
6 months.
Well, we built 200 units in 6 months. But, in that 6 months. But it's, you know, it was, you know, low interest rates. The problem is the whether it's the federal government or the municipalities, they like to give with one hand and take with the other. So it's okay, we'll give you better deals on financing, but you've got to introduce these affordability criteria into your homes or environmental criteria or whatever that just add costs. Mm-hmm. And so you're still no better off than you were, really. So, I mean, yeah, we need to see interest rates come down a little bit. We need to see cap rates come off at least 25, maybe 50 basis points for these deals to really look good again. And then we'll start to see, I think, a lot more rental supply come on. But anything that starts now is, and you know, anybody that buys a rental site now, you're 5 years, 6 years away from delivering those homes. So that's, you know, continues to be the challenge. So
what are some of the other, like, again, going back to you know, learning a lot from your takes on Twitter over the years, like what are some of the most, the headlines or the misconceptions in the market that you see and you're like, it just consistently shaking your head, like, man, these are the myths or the misunderstandings that won't die about housing.
Yeah, I think, you know, people need to take a step back and look at, well, you know, you may not like this building or you may not like who is buying these homes if you think it's all investors or something like that. And you know, there's this whole talk about this toxic demand. But you have to look at over the lifetime of a building. If you didn't build that building, well, where would those, you know, who's living in these homes? You know, we've got all the data now. We know that empty condo thing was largely a myth.
Right.
You know, it was always sort of underpinned by, you know, this sort of NIMBY, we don't really want the development in our neighborhood and we'll just try to find every excuse we can to try to obstruct it. So the government had to introduce all these regulations, not really to change anybody's behavior, but to sort of defeat those arguments, I think, over time before they could say, okay, you know, maybe it actually is the fact that we have a housing shortage. And we need to build more housing and we've got too many people. And so there's one thing the pandemic laid bare. It was certainly that, right? Because we had no immigration for over a year, right? When the borders were closed, yet we had the housing market go on a tear.
Right.
So it wasn't foreign demand, right?
Right.
You know, anyway, so yeah, it's that, but it's, I always also have to say, you can't look at who are necessarily the people buying the first people buying those homes. It's, you have to look at a building over its life cycle, or you have to, you know, yes, they're expensive when they're new, right? Like, as we all know, new housing, it's, our costs keep going up, they're still going up 5 to 10% per year, right? It's very expensive to deliver new housing. So it's not going to be for everybody. But every home that's out there just about was built by a developer. It wasn't built by, you know, somebody, some little craftsman with his own hands.
Yeah.
A group of elves or something building these.
Unless it was on the Sunshine Coast,
yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. So, you know, new housing becomes old housing. And you know, wouldn't we be so much better off if we just built, you know, 10,000 townhouses on the west side of Vancouver 20 years ago, and now we had this stock of available
20-year-old
townhomes, right?
Totally.
To raise our family instead of these neighborhoods that have hollowed out now. I think I did some research when we were doing our Shaughnessy project, and those census districts around our project there, they'd lost 15% of their children in between the two censuses. So over a 5-year period, that Shaughnessy neighborhood, and I think West Point Grey is the exact same, had lost 15% of its population of children over a 5-year period. I mean, that's staggering. If that doesn't say, you know, we've got a sick city here, we've got a problem in these neighborhoods. I don't know what other statistic you could point to.
Well, Jens von Bergman has done some incredible studies in children leaving Vancouver. And it actually just makes you think if the future of the Lower Mainland is actually Burquitlam or areas like that where kids exist and families exist.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to do what we can to stem that flow and provide great family-oriented housing. I mean, that's something I feel really strongly about now. As I mentioned, my kids are 15 and 17 now, so they're going to be out in the housing market and within a decade, right? Where are they going to live? I don't know. You know.
Are you optimistic about the west side of Vancouver?
I'm really excited about the projects that the MST is doing. I really like the way the Cambie corridor, you know, has finally introduced some good townhouses that are starting to happen now. Notwithstanding people complaining, there's not enough commercial services on Cambie, but overall, I think that was especially phase three being the mostly townhouses. We're not doing anything in there right now, but certainly, that's the direction that sets the tone for Vancouver. I think that and sort of the Marpole plan, you know, and some of these other community plans that provide the ground-oriented housing. The towers are great, you know, maybe one day we'll take our business back into doing towers. I've got a lot of experience doing towers, but for now, I still believe that people really like to raise their kids in sort of ground-oriented housing. So that's really what we're really focused on. And we'll do it wherever we can, wherever I can find a site that's zoned, that the numbers make sense. I'd be bullish on that everywhere in the Lower Mainland, including the west side of Vancouver.
So on that note, Richard, where do you see the real estate market in the Lower Mainland over the next 1, 3, and 5 years? You're bullish on, it sounds like you're generally bullish and you're generally optimistic.
I am. I learned a few times over my career, it's a risky bet to bet against the Vancouver real estate market.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the constant attributes of Vancouver, of our natural climate, our you know, pretty moderate politics and in Canada generally. And it's going to continue to be a draw, right? Like, this is the best place to live in the world. You know, I think we need to do a lot more on our business competitiveness, as we always seem to have to do in Vancouver. It's Vancouver is it's a high cost jurisdiction and hard for companies to compete, hard for us to get head offices. Having said that, we do have a lot of leading companies and people want to be here. So I'm a Vancouver permeable. I think it's safe to say, I think. And I think now, having come through what we've come through in the pandemic, and we see some moderation on interest rates. Yeah. I mean, how can you not be bullish? It still continues to be, like I said, the supply build out for that to really move the needle is going to take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to happen, but it's not going to happen overnight. So demand is still going to exceed supply. I think certainly in the market segments that we're active in our ground oriented product, it's a lot easier to add apartment supply. I think it's a lot easier to, you know, add 1,000 units in a you know, couple towers, 3-tower complex. There's a lot of those going up around town, and we don't really play in that space that much. But I think with the ground-oriented housing, I think you can't go wrong.
So you have a niece.
Or a 17-year-old son.
Well, yeah, or a 15-year-old daughter. But they're of an age, let's keep it with the niece. So they're of age where they can actually buy real estate. They're looking to make an investment in Vancouver, and they come to you and they say, Richard, what should I buy and where should I buy it?
Hmm. Well, I mean, somebody, you know, early on in my career said, you know, just buy as much as you can, as soon as you can. You know, it held true, right?
Yeah, like, it's not bad advice.
I was able to start this business because I started buying condos in my 20s, bottom line, right? Like, you have to start building wealth, and whether it's for investment or for your own home, that's all I could say. you know, what neighborhoods? I don't know. Whatever neighborhoods you like. Depends on your personality. I've named a few that I love.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Kitsilano. I love Kitsilano. Still super bullish. But there's a lot of awesome suburban neighborhoods now that aren't even suburban anymore. I mean, Central Surrey is going to be incredible. Like, I see that as a future center of gravity of the region, really moving out towards that way. You know, some of the quality of high-rise development and mixed-use development I see going on there is staggering. I mean, I think all our development that's happening in the regions, you know, our planners are doing a really good job in planning these complete communities. Our developers are some best in the world. You know, this is a tough market to operate in. So if you've survived in Vancouver for the last 20, 30 years, you know what you're doing and you're good at it. So the quality of development that you know, our colleagues in the industry are providing are making for incredible communities. You know, I don't think there's a bad place to be in the Lower Mainland.
Right.
But I particularly like Port Royal
right now. Speaking, we'll end on that, but Port Royal, what's going on with sales and when can people expect sales? And do you have any other info on starting prices or anything like that?
Yeah,
that
you can share? I don't have any information on prices right now. We haven't filed our disclosure statement yet, but okay. We're starting pre-registrations right now. We're starting construction right now. Of our first four blocks of homes. So villageportroyal.ca, we're taking pre-registrations, working with some of your Oakwin colleagues there to bring that to market in late May, early June. So get on the list now. We're only releasing 23 homes at the initial release. I expect they'll go pretty quick.
Right.
It's the breakdown of the units?
All three bedrooms.
All three bedrooms.
Yeah. So some tandem garages, some double garages. The double garage homes are a bit bigger. They're closer to 1,500 square feet. The tandem homes are in that sort of 1,300 square foot range. So we sort of have two main price points there that we will probably hit. Yeah, but all, you know, connected to green space and within a few years, this master plan community will be sort of built out. And this, I should say, the site really is kind of the linchpin of that Port Royal neighborhood that is surrounded by development on all sides. So we're kind of the last piece of the puzzle to go in that neighborhood. One of the sort of final opportunities for townhomes in that east end of Queensboro Port Royal neighborhood.
Exciting. Well, maybe we'll leave it there. We do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems. With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs. We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country. There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Question number one, Richard, is what is one book that you'd recommend for our listeners?
Okay, well, I've recently been, I've discovered audio. But not discovered audiobooks, but the Vancouver Public Library has an app called Libby. And so I'm listening while I'm driving or whatever to all these old classic business books that you know, we all listened to 20 years ago, whether it's, you know, I'm listening to Good to Great right now. But the one that I really enjoyed was a new book, was actually by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, Be Useful.
Be Useful. Seven whatever lessons for life,
yeah,
from Arnie. And I really enjoyed it. It's simple, but
does he read it?
He narrates it.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's nothing more motivating when you're working out listening to Schwarzenegger talk about
how that to be sounds useful. Amazing, actually.
Do a few more reps or something.
Have you seen the Netflix documentary?
I did, yeah. And that's kind of what prompted me to, and you know, being somebody who grew up on his movies and totally. Everything, right? Yeah. So It's
what a fireplace.
I like fireplaces.
I like his message. It's just simple, you know, strong, you know, be useful.
Right.
Do what you can. And he's at a point now where he's focused on giving back.
Totally.
You know, it's just nice. I recommend it. I really
grateful to be in North America.
Yeah, and, very much so. Yeah.
Fantastic. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Huh. Okay. Well, sort of related. Yeah, my daughter started doing early morning volleyball at the Richmond Oval weekdays. And so I drive out with her in the mornings. It's become a new habit for 6 a.m. You know, we're up at 5:30. We're out the door. She's 14, just turned 15. And so then I got myself a membership to the Richmond Oval, and I do a weights workout there while she's doing her volleyball. And that's new for me. I've always been more of an endurance sports, you know, cardio kind of guy. I've done Grand Fondos and a lot of half marathons and that sort of stuff, but I've always hated lifting. But now at this age, I think it becomes almost a necessity. So that's been a completely new thing for me in the last 6 months, and I'm actually really enjoying it, and I'm feeling better. You know,
I was going to say, so are you feeling the? Because I know you're a big you do a lot of cycling, right? Like it's not like you were not in shape before, but it's just that weightlifting.
Yeah. It's you know, I'm 52 now, and I was actually. You know, and I record my workouts I'm just completely self-directed. I used to work out at a expensive gym across from my office with a trainer once a week and probably spent 10 times what I spent now and saw zero results. Now I just do it. I record in my OneNote, you know, what I did, and then I cut and paste it to the next day and see if I can improve, you know, a little bit. And it's, even at, you know, in my 50s, I find that I'm, you know, able to get, you know, increase the amount of weight that I do. And so it's just good at this age to be able to know that you can still, you know, decline hasn't really started yet.
I bet that's a pretty good gym too.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's a real legacy that of 2010, right? What a facility. I mean, for volleyball and hockey and, you know, everything. It's really impressive.
Amazing. Question number three, what have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation
post Oscars?
Yeah, I do not watch a ton of TV. I got to be honest. The last series that I really got into was, I think, Peaky Blinders. And I really liked that.
Oh, yeah.
Succession was really good. I was really into that. My wife and I were both into that. I watch a lot of soccer. That's about
nice.
I don't think there's been Succession was kind of the last of the.
I feel like that's. I really miss Succession.
Yeah. Favorite band or music, Richard?
I'm a bit embarrassed to say. Like, I don't think my taste in music really never made it into the 20th century. 21st made it out of the 20th century. So, I listen to a lot of just like classic rock, and you know, I still listen to the music that I listened to in high school and university, whether it's, you know, Led Zeppelin or whatever.
Great.
My daughter and I, we have a playlist that we share. So when we're driving out to volleyball, she'll put on like 90s rap, Tupac, and, you know, 50 Cent. Yeah. And I'll put on Black Sabbath or something like that. And it makes for an interesting, you know, playlist. But yeah.
Most girl dads are talking Taylor Swift at this age.
She's not so much a Swiftie.
Nice.
No.
Wow. Yeah. 90s hip hop. I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah.
Last but not least, something you have purchased under $1,500 that has changed your life in the last few years, or at least had a positive impact.
Yeah. So not a big cook, but we bought one of those Le Creuset Dutch ovens, I don't know, just recently, a month or two ago. And so I've been cooking like really slow cooking stuff with that.
Huh.
So like short rib pappardelle or something like
that. Nice.
You can cook it at like 250 overnight or something, or braised beef or bolognese or stuff like that. So that thing, that's made a change. That's, you know, I've been cooking more and more, you know, really not complicated, but like more flavorful. There's really good stuff with that. So that's been a good little purchase for us.
Nice. Yeah. Well, Richard, how can people find more about what you're up to? And I know you've given the website for the Village, Port Royal, but maybe if you could remind people how they can get in touch, but also register.
Yeah. Villageportroyal.ca for our Berquitlam project, liveatsammer.com, our sort of parent website, domushomes.ca.
And they can follow you on
still,
Twitter.
Are you still active on X?
I'm much less so, I'd say. I'm more just, if I read, I do read stuff on there and maybe respond to it or repost, retweet things that I find interesting. But I think that community has really declined over the last few years.
It is amazing, actually, how I feel like I used to spend a lot of time on there and mainly not engaging, almost just following along people like yourself. Yeah. And it does feel like way worse and kind of gross and crappy being on there now. Like, I'm actually more following along on LinkedIn of all places, which,
it's LinkedIn just. LinkedIn is good. I'd like to do more on LinkedIn. I need to.
You know what? And there's people like.
That might be where a lot of people go, right?
Once you go, you start realizing like Wendy Waters. I don't know if she's still on X, but she's big on LinkedIn, and Brendan Augmentson, like those. There's a lot of useful stuff going on in LinkedIn, actually.
Yeah, definitely. People post great stuff, and it's nice to see what your colleagues are up to. And
absolutely,
good community.
All right. Well, thanks again. Hopefully, we can have you back in less than 5 years.
Yeah, no, look forward to it. Onward and upward. And thank you guys so much for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Domus Holmes's Richard Whitstock.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Richard. I feel like we've been following him on Twitter or X now for many years. So that 5-year gap felt narrower than the full 5 years.
Totally. Sure. It's funny. He's such a great follow on Twitter. Hopefully he moves over to LinkedIn where we'll see more of him. But trying to think of like big takeaways here. One is, I think more than a lot of people, or maybe more than most people, Richard like weds how he wants to see the city with his business plan.
Yeah.
In this like really compelling and thoughtful way, which is exciting.
Right.
And it also is like an interesting property type to go after, right? Like missing middle housing, but also the townhome.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, I've been talking right now, it seems like a lot of end users moving through the market. And at least in the city of Vancouver, I mean, you're always almost in a low inventory market when you're looking for townhomes. And we said years ago that, you know, townhomes are going to be the new single family in many ways. And I feel like that's almost there. You're working with young couples or young families that, you know, they don't want to take a swing at a house, especially houses that need to be fixed up, right?
Yeah.
Like, because a lot of the houses, even around the $2 million price point, a lot of it now needs to be cleaned up substantially, right? So if you can get a really beautiful townhouse for 1.3, 1.5, and the same livable square footage too, because you think about it, you know, most of these post-war bungalows, you're not really getting 1,200-1,300 square feet.
And it's interesting, you know, thinking about the city of Vancouver specifically with that new zoning, the R11 zoning, like Richard's point was, you can't really scale. It's like a halfway measure to row homes or townhomes where you can actually scale and build 40, 50, 60 units where it's like a meaningful amount of housing for a neighborhood. Whereas right now it's like, okay, I wonder what, you know, maybe it's a duplex, maybe it's a fourplex, but we're not seeing tons of new townhomes being built in the city. So this undersupply idea, I think, is here to stay in a lot of ways for the time being. And like, I think of like places like Jeff's Residences on Napier by Commercial, where it's like beautiful townhomes. It's used to be single family. You're like, this is great. Right. We need more of this.
Well, okay. So, and this is the other thing that I was thinking about when Richard was talking, but this idea that like in 10 years from now, say for example, when Berquitlam is filled out in kind of a meaningful way, you know, it's walkable to all these very, you know, restaurants, shops, everything else. You've got these townhomes, but they're not 1,000 square foot like a lot of these multiplexes are going to be in Vancouver. They're 1,700 square feet.
Right.
And they've got
1,415.
And they've got a backyard and they've got, you know what I mean? They've got space. And so it's a lot. You can see where the draw is going to be for young families that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are leaving Vancouver.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's, but man, Burke Quitlam, I feel like it's the, did we say that on the podcast? But I feel like it's true. It's like, man, center of the universe. Everybody's talking about Burke Quitlam.
A lot of people are talking about Burke Quitlam right now, for sure.
But what else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live, including all our back catalog, the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. We have things like the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer where you can get stats before anyone else, different types of stats, VIP presale access to great projects like the ones Domus Homes is featuring right now, as well as a little research tool called Private Client Services.
Yeah, Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You get basically realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Click buy with us and you can set up your free account. This is the best way to monitor the market. You got a favorites folder. You can monitor specific properties. It's really great to see what stuff's selling for right now.
Well, and you said spotty during the interview, and I think that is bang on. It's like different types of product and different price bands are totally different in this market.
And so, the optimism is week by week.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, what's going on Monday? Who knows? So it's a great time to be monitoring the market via PCS, and we'll be happy to set you up. You can call me at any time to discuss that or anything else, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line. info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We'll have a great week and we're back here with another fantastic episode next Thursday.
That's right.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.